The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show on a busy Wednesday morning. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy. Got a lot to get to. We're going to hear Brad's interview with Kent Summers, the AZ Central columnist, about all things Arizona Cardinals, recapping a busy draft weekend. And there's still a lot to get to, a lot to sift through with what's going on with the Arizona Cardinals. Of course, Diamondbacks had a big win last night against the New York Yankees. Always get a little nostalgic when the Yankees come in, and the Diamondbacks definitely played that up, with media availability for Luis Gonzalez and Randy Johnson a few weeks ago. Jesse McGuire played the national anthem when the Yankees came to town. So always an interesting weekend when the Yankees are able to come to Chase Field. And of course, we have playoff basketball as well as playoff hockey. So always a lot going on here in the great state of Arizona. Let's kick things off with the rundown. That's brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And I'm actually going to go, I think, broadcasting. Going to kick it off with what's going on with Monday Night Football. Everybody has seemed to have an opinion on what the Monday Night Football crew should be, and it just came out. Joe Tessitore will remain the play-by-play guy. Booger McFarland will move from his on-field analyst into the press box with Tessitore, and then Lisa Salters will be the sideline reporter. My one question, what happens to the snot rocket? Booger McFarland had his his buggy that essentially he took and was blocking a bunch of viewers in the stadium as he was trying to do analysis. Now that he's in the studio, are they going to do a whole game broadcast from the snot rocket, the booger mobile? But overall, I think that probably a wise move. I personally would have loved to see Pat McAfee. If you saw what he did at the NFL draft in Tennessee, obviously the former Colts punter, a division rival, was really kind of laying into Titans fans, saying, I'm not going to talk about the record that the Titans had against the Colts while I was there, but I know we scored a lot of points. We didn't punt much, so you probably don't know who I am. Hi, I'm Pat McAfee. And then went on to have a just beautiful soliloquy about with the Stanford nerd, Andrew Luck, and all sorts of things. So they need to get that man a broadcasting job because he has a very entertaining podcast, always a good guest on other people's shows. But give that man a microphone. News just also came down in an awkward transition. Just seeing this right now. So with what's going on with college basketball, the investigation into Sean Miller, Book Richardson, Christian Dawkins. So news just came out that federal prosecutors on Wednesday played a recording in which Book Richardson was telling Christian Dawkins that Sean Miller was paying star center DeAndre Ayton $10,000 per month while enrolled there. That is according to an ESPN report. Look, there is a lot of conflicting reports with this, a lot to sift through. I'm just wondering at what point does this investigation just sully up recruiting? And it hasn't for Arizona at all. They have one of the best recruiting classes coming in. But at what point does just having this investigation happen and having the association of your head coach, whether he's guilty or not, just in the court of public of the public, how much does this affect the program? Because we've seen this is a drawn out process, and I think everyone was anticipating this. And Devin Henry, our MVP behind the glass, even said before the show, when we were kind of discussing what was going on, he said that it's going to get probably worse before it gets better, and I tend to agree with him on that. But just how does this affect the program moving forward? When will players start potentially looking elsewhere? Again, we haven't seen that yet, but when could that happen if it ever happens? What's going to happen if Sean Miller is sticking around for multiple years going through this investigation? At what point does the public, or not so much the public, but more so the prospects start to turn and look elsewhere? Again, we haven't seen it yet. Just asking that question. That's the one question I've had as we are looking at this. Looking at the NBA playoffs, interesting game last night between the Warriors and the Rockets. Warriors able to pull that one out. Reports are right now James Harden can barely see after an injury to both eyes. And I don't know if you saw photos on social media last night, but his eyes were crazy bloodshot after taking a hit from Draymond Green. And despite that, he still put up he still scored 29 points. That's the type of scorer James Harden is. This is developing into a pretty darn good rivalry. And I think that this is probably going to be the rivalry moving forward. We saw glimpses of what could have been as a rivalry in the NBA when it was the Warriors and OKC. Kevin Durant moves on to the Warriors. All of a sudden, that's not so much of a rivalry anymore. It's just Russell Wilson trying to do 14,000 things to try to keep up with the greatest team that we've ever seen in the NBA. And I think that the NBA really needs this right now because there are a lot of issues with the game right now. For the most part, it's pretty much chalk across the board in the playoffs. It's still an entertaining product. It is still great basketball. But at the end of the day, probably opening night, you can chalk in, all right, it's going to be the Warriors. And there's a potential of maybe, two or three teams on the East Coast that could make it to the finals. They need some sort of competition. I think the Rockets are the ones built for that. And when you add a bit of physicality to it, and I'm not saying injuring players is what the sport needs, but when you add a little bit of tension, all of a sudden this becomes even more watchable. And the way that Adam Silver has really let the players embrace the petty has really made this an entertaining product over the years, where players are more accessible than ever now with social media, with expressing their personality. You look at the NFL and everyone's pretty, buttoned up and doesn't really say anything. Whereas with the NBA, they're letting these guys flourish and letting the petty happen. And I think a lot of people are here for it. So if you have two really good teams going head to head and you're seeing that tension, not only on the court, but off the court, and there are, talking points that can just be the box score of, hey, Steph Curry went for 30 plus again. Hey, James Harden dominated again. Now, all of a sudden, there are other storylines you can talk about and, players going back and forth. That's when the game, I think, is really starting to thrive. And we've seen that a lot, but it's been mixed with the Warriors' domination. It's the balance of respecting the dynasty and embracing the dynasty that the Warriors are. And we've seen this in the past with the Yankees in the early 2000s, with the Patriots at certain times. But the way that the NBA playoffs are built, it's so hard to pull off an upset in a seven-game series, especially when you have four of the top 20 players on a court at one time on one team. It's just so hard to even match that. And the super teams try to match that, but no one can touch the Warriors right now. And it'll be interesting to see this offseason what happens if Kevin Durant, there have been plenty of reports of him going to New York, going elsewhere. Same thing with Klay Thompson. Does Klay want to be the guy, or is he fine being one of the top 20 players in the NBA, but probably the fourth player that's mentioned on the Warriors? The dynamic of the Golden State Warriors moving forward is going to be very interesting. But obviously, they're navigating through the postseason as well. So a lot of interesting stuff there. With the Diamondbacks, we're going to get into a lot of Diamondbacks on this show. But looking at what the Diamondbacks did with Zach Godley, they moved him out of the rotation. There's not a corresponding move yet. He's moved to the bullpen. They don't know who's going to fill that rotation spot right now. And Torrey Lovello, I was sitting in on that media availability. He left it open-ended on how long he'll be in the bullpen. But he just said Zach Godley needs to figure some things out. And he has an ERA of 7.58 right now, a whip of 1.719 in 29 innings. And yeah, he is really struggling since that 2017 season where he was just so dominant and he was getting guys to chase out of the zone. That's been the real key for Zach Godley and Robbie Ray. When they were at their best in 2017, they were getting guys to chase a lot. And those numbers are starting to decrease for both of them. And that's when you see the hard hit stats start to elevate. But since that 2017 season, he has a 5 ERA. And with the way the Dodgers are playing right now, with the talent that the Rockies have right now, the Padres are up and coming. Fernando Tatis Jr. just went on the DL, but they seem to be another up-and-coming team. When you look at that pitching staff, they're starting to figure some things out, and they have the bats. And then, you know, the San Francisco Giants, they've had their struggles, but it seems like every time the Diamondbacks go to San Francisco, I say this, when you go to Oracle Park, formerly AT&T Park, games just get weird, and it's tough to win there. But you need, if you're the Diamondbacks and you've had to move on from some really key players in the last couple of years, you need your rotation to set the tone. You need your bullpen to set the tone. The pitching is where that really needs to come in. The hitting is definitely there right now, but you don't want to get in a slugfest with the Dodgers when the Dodgers have a Cody Bellinger, because there is not a Cody Bellinger on the Diamondbacks, certainly, but there are a few Cody Bellingers throughout the entire nation. So you need that pitching. I think it's wise of them, especially at this time, to move Godley to the bullpen. There's quite a few off days coming up where the Diamondbacks may not even need to bring somebody up. John Duplantier has been linked to it. Taylor Clark's been linked to it. Maybe Matt Cook could get a spot start. He's struggled quite a bit as well. So that's a potential move where they could go. But they have those off days where they may not even have to go to a new arm in the rotation. And maybe in those 2 weeks, Godley shows Lovello something and he can put himself back into the rotation. But I think it's the correct move right now. A lot of struggle, and sometimes it's just a clean reset. We saw that with Cliff Lee. He became a Cy Young pitcher after he was optioned to AAA with the Cleveland Indians quite a few years ago now. But I think it's a strong move for Zach Godley. We're going to dive more into the Diamondbacks coming up next. We're a month into the season, so I want to do a state of the Diamondbacks. Where are they at? Where have they looked really good? Where have they struggled? I touched on Zach Godley. I'll probably bring him up again next segment. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. You can check out the Diamonds in the Desert podcast on Sports 360 AZ. We have a lot of baseball content, a lot of Diamondback Central content on that podcast. And with it being 1 month in to the MLB season, I wanted to do kind of a state of the D-backs. Where are they at right now? There were a lot of predictions on where they would be in the National League West. You know, obviously, when you're losing players like Paul Goldschmidt, A.J. Pollock, Pat Corbin, Chris Owings, who I think was quite a bit underrated, and his presence, they really made sure to highlight that in spring training, that they needed to find more CO-type players, guys that could fill multiple positions. There were a lot of questions on where the Diamondbacks would be. Right now, they stand at 17-13, two games out of the NL West lead, behind the Dodgers, who are at 20-12, and they're tied with the Padres at 17-13. Now, as we look at this, you know, going into this season, we didn't know how Adam Jones was going to be jumping in to where the, you know, how he would be doing in the lineup. Quick update here. I actually just got word from the Diamondbacks that they will be calling shortly. We're going to have Blake Swihart on from the Diamondbacks to discuss kind of what's been going on with this team and how they've been doing. The new addition for the Arizona Diamondbacks, he'll be calling in here shortly to go ahead and discuss kind of what's been going on. He was a late addition to that team. The Diamonds in the Desert podcast can be heard on Sports 360 AZ, talking all things Arizona Diamondbacks. And we are now joined by Blake Swihart, the newest Arizona Diamondback acquired just a couple of weeks ago. Blake, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, kind of a simple but broad question, just how has the transition gone? You were traded for just a couple of weeks ago from Boston to Arizona. What's that transition been like for you?
Yeah, you know, so far so good. And, you know, I've actually played against a bunch of the guys on the team before. So, felt pretty comfortable coming in, and, you know, it's been a good transition.
I was going to say, you know, obviously having Torey Lovello as the manager, Mike Hazen as the general manager, Boston guys that you know well, you're sharing a clubhouse with Adam Jones, Steven Souza, guys that, you know well in the AL East. You're currently playing the Yankees. Just, you know, the familiarity factor, how much does that help in the transition these first couple of weeks with that, you know, kind of getting your feet under you as you've come to the desert?
Yeah, you know, it's helped a lot. And being a catcher with Boston, you know, seeing all these guys come up to bat and saying hello to them, and, you know, it's helped out a lot, you know, just getting to know these guys a little more personally now. And, you know, it's been great.
Torey was your interim manager in 2015. How have you seen him grow as a manager from then to now? I know it's been only a couple weeks with him, but how have you really seen him grow as a manager?
Yeah, you know, just the way he communicates with the guys and lets them know what's going on, and how he goes about his business, handling every situation. And, you know, communication's a big thing with players, and, you know, he does a great job with that, and, you know, he controls the team the right way.
When the Diamondbacks made the deal for you, Mike Hazen said that they didn't necessarily have a spot within the lineup or a concrete spot, but they knew they couldn't pass up on a talent like you. Just what does that do for you as you make this transition, knowing that this was a team in a front office that really wanted you?
Yeah, you know, it gives me a lot of confidence, and, you know, it's nice to play with that confidence and that backing and that support. And, you know, I'm coming into a great situation here with a team that's doing really well and a bunch of great players that gel together. So it's my job to get on that same page with the team and do anything I can to help this team win.
As you're getting on that same page, what sort of discussions have they had with you about that role as a potential outfielder, maybe even, you know, catching a little bit? I know that you have plenty of versatility that you can bring to the field.
Yeah, you know, that's my job right now, and to go out there and do anything I can to help this team win. So, you know, I do catching drills, infield drills, outfield drills, whatever this team needs. And, you know, I know what I can do with the baseball bat, so I need to get that going. And, you know, it's my job to come in here and help this team any way I can. And, you know, they're already on a great roll, so I just need to fit in with them.
How tough is it to juggle, you know, the outfield drills, the infield drills, the catching drills? I'm sure you're juggling plenty of gloves as you're coming to the ballpark on a given day. Just how tough is it to navigate those multiple positions at one time?
You know, I've gotten a lot better at it since I did it a lot last year. And, you know, I think it's pretty fun, and it gives me more opportunity to get in the lineup. And, you know, it gives Torey some flexibility too, whether giving guys day off, making double switches, you know, just being able to play multiple positions. It helps the team a lot.
We appreciate the time. I know it's a busy time on getaway day. Thanks so much for joining us, Blake.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
That was Blake Swihart, the Diamondbacks utility player, we'll call him. As we discussed, he is a man that wears many hats and at sometimes many helmets, and many gloves. He is a new addition, and when this deal was happening, Mike Hazen, as I said, he mentioned on the roster, it's not like they were necessarily filling a hole, but they couldn't pass up on a guy that they felt had a lot of talent, just didn't quite have that opportunity. And that's something I think that really plays with the Diamondbacks right now. You look at Christian Walker. You look at Carson Kelly. Merrill Kelly had to go to Korea to go get an opportunity. These are a lot of guys that are just looking for opportunities. In the case of Carson Kelly and in the case of Christian Walker, they were just behind two of the best players in baseball in Yadier Molina and Paul Goldschmidt. They were just waiting for their opportunity. And now that we've seen, especially with Christian Walker offensively, he's really played at a very, very high level, especially offensively. And then you look at what Carson Kelly's been able to do, and it seems like he has the same swing every time and is able to just kind of put that ball down the line for doubles. From what I've heard, he's really managing the pitching staff well and getting his feet under him. And we've seen with Luke Weaver his improvement throughout the year, and I think having that familiarity with Carson Kelly behind the dish has really helped him, because every single time Luke Weaver has started, Kelly's been the one catching him. And I think that is very intentional, having it, you know, two young players play together. They came up together. They know each other well. They are very close. So to have those two guys go head to head, I think that's very important. And then I mentioned, you know, Merrill Kelly. He had to go international, you know, to go become and refine becoming a starting pitcher. And he's come back and had a solid start to the season. I think as a five pitcher, you know, you should be pretty impressed with what he's been able to do. And there were certain games, especially, you know, Swihart and the Red Sox, you know, against Merrill Kelly. Kelly was just peppering the zone. He threw like 95 pitches and 72 of them or something like that were strikes. Like, he was just attacking the zone. So it's been a little up and down lately for him, but you can certainly see that he belongs in an MLB rotation. So opportunity is what's going to happen when you have to replace AJ Pollock and you have to replace Paul Goldschmidt. You have to replace Patrick Corbin. And these guys, I think, have done a very nice job to put themselves towards the top of the NL West. And we appreciate Blake coming in to discuss those opportunities. Everything I read from you know, the Boston side of things was the talent is definitely there. He has the versatility to find the field. It's just finding those consistent bats and finding that consistent playing time to make sure that he is you know, able to produce consistently. And that should help him grow. And I think Mike Hazen saw that, obviously being familiar with the Red Sox. And that's why he jumped on that opportunity to bring him in. So he's definitely still getting his feet under him. We were talking before the segment, and he was like, most of my stuff is still in Boston. It's getting shipped over, but I'm here. My bat's here. My glove's here. Like, let's go. So we'll see how he develops, you know, over the course of the season. But I think that definitely helps having that versatility. Coming up next, we're going to do the aforementioned state of the Diamondbacks. You know, when the Diamondbacks call and say, hey, we can actually get this guy on right now, we wanted to, you know, prioritize Blake. So we're going to go to break real quick. We'll do the state of the Diamondbacks, and then we'll wrap the show up with Kent Summers. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. We appreciate Blake Swihart of the Arizona Diamondbacks jumping on with us earlier, talking all things Arizona Diamondbacks, his transition from Boston to Arizona. It's been a crazy couple of weeks for him. Diamondbacks on getaway day with the New York Yankees had a solid win against the Bronx Bombers last night. And now they're going to try to get the two-game sweep before they head off onto the road again. And we are in full swing with baseball. And as we are 1 month into the season, I wanted to kind of look at where the Diamondbacks are at, the state of the Arizona Diamondbacks. As I mentioned earlier before, Blake called in, 17-13 on the year so far, tied for second with the San Diego Padres. And then you have the Dodgers leading the way at 20-12. So I think where this team is at right now, you're replacing Paul Goldschmidt, you're replacing Pat Corbin, you're replacing AJ Pollock. Obviously, a lot of talent, a lot of fan favorites in that group. And I think kind of the consensus was this team would probably be around 500. I think for the most part, a lot of people thought that it would be a touch below 500. I was a little bit higher on where the Diamondbacks were coming into the season. I thought that they still had plenty of talent. And they just needed guys to step into opportunities, much like, you know, you think of some of those playoff teams in what was it, 2011 with, you know, Ryan Roberts. No one thought that this guy was going to step in and be an everyday infielder for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but he took that opportunity and ran with it. And that helped will, they had three or four of those guys, and that helped them will themselves to the postseason. I think it's the same scenario here. You have Christian Walker step in as the everyday first baseman with Jake Lamb going down to injury early in the season. So it's not as much of a platoon situation. It's Christian Walker is going to be your guy moving forward. And overall, I think he's really produced, had some very nice power numbers. He's hitting 307 right now. And at the major league level, at least, he wasn't a 300 hitter in past years. I know it's been very limited opportunity for him, but he was a guy that was kind of boom or bust on the power front, and that was sort of it. You're seeing him hit the ball. You're seeing him. It looks like he develops as a hitter. He's going opposite field more. He's finding the gaps, and he's stepped in really nicely. I think Wilmer Flores has been a nice addition for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I think the key here is moving Wilmer more to a utility infielder role. I was super against having Ketel Marte be your everyday center fielder, and that wasn't necessarily a comment upon Ketel Marte. It was more the depth that you had in the outfield. And with Steven Souza Jr. going down days before opening day, I thought he was going to have a huge year. But him going down and then them being able to have Adam Jones there to help with that depth and keep Ketel in the middle infield. And, you know, defensively, if you look at where Ketel Marte is and Nick Ahmed is as a defensive middle infield, I'm not sure if there's one that's much better in Major League Baseball. Dansby Swanson, Ozzie Albies, maybe you could make that argument. But I think defensively, this is a special group, and that's where they're going to need to be able to save runs and help out their pitching staff, which has been pretty good, but not great. Right now, the bullpen number is middle of the road. There have been some ugly games, and I think that's inflating it. You know, when John Ryan Murphy is contributing to your bullpen ERA, and he's given up 7 earned runs, your numbers are probably going to be a little bit higher than what they really are. But you look at Greg Holland. He has been a huge addition. He hasn't given up a run yet. 10 innings, struck out 15. He's done exactly what he did 2 years ago. When he was with the Rockies and he was tied for the National League lead for saves. Obviously a rough year last year with St. Louis and then kind of righted the ship a little bit with Washington. But you're able to really shorten the game when Archie Bradley's on, and he's been on. Andrew Chafin's been pretty darn good this year. TJ McFarland just got back. Again, our Haley Stasiak is going to laugh at me because it seems like I bring up TJ McFarland a lot. But the versatility as a left-handed pitcher that he can bring to the table is huge. Not only is he a guy that can come in a high-leverage situation and get one batter out, but he can also go ahead and go 4 innings if a guy goes down to injury, if a guy, just struggles. And he's able to save the rest of the bullpen. They may not win that game, but he's able to save the rest of the bullpen. He just got reinstated yesterday from the IL. I think that's huge. I think that's going to be a big-time addition to that bullpen. Now let's look at the rotation. We talked about Zach Godley and his struggles. He just got moved to the bullpen to try to figure some things out. We'll see what happens. I think that spot, if it's going to be long-term, I would think it's going to be Taylor Clark or John Duplantier. I think both of them have proved it. Duplantier a little bit more just because he's had more opportunities. But we saw him in that 15-inning game get out of some tough situations, some bases-loaded situations, and less than 2 outs, and he handled it. And he was tough as nails and able to go out and get some outs. There's a reason he's one of the top prospects in this system. And same goes for Taylor Clark. Clark only had, 1 outing, but he threw 3 innings. It was lights out. And these are the guys that have been the cream of the crop of this, farm system. And they were at the top when the farm system wasn't as good. It's improving, and they're remaining at the top. So that should tell you where they are at a talent level. Usually, certain years, guys will be up at the top, and they may get pushed down by just better players as they get drafted and developed. But Duplantier and Clark have been up at the top. Jazz Chisholm, this has been multi-year guys that have been top 5 prospects. So I think that's where they may go. Yoan Lopez, another guy in that bullpen who's done really well. But with the rotation, you look at Zach Greinke. He really struggled in opening day. He was not good at opening day. Since then, he's been pretty darn lights out. And you look at what he was able to do this past outing against the Yankees, and he was able to get deep into the ballgame. And I think that's been the issue with Zach Greinke, from being a very good pitcher to being an elite pitcher with the Diamondbacks. He can still he can still definitely sling it. He can still definitely, get those outs. But it seemed like at times he wasn't very efficient, so he wouldn't get super deep into ball games, and he wouldn't be that guy who is, one of the biggest contracts in baseball. And that's when people start to question, wait, why are we paying this guy so much money if he's making it, barely into the sixth inning? You're seeing him go deeper now, get to the seventh inning, or really the eighth inning consistently, throwing seven full innings. That's all you can really ask for from a top starter. So I think he's, at least this year, he's edging his way to an elite starter and the ace of this staff. And that's really what you need. Now, Robbie Ray, he's been a bit up and down. It seems like Robbie Ray of 2016 before he really blew up as a starter in 2017, a guy that will strike out a lot of batters, but if they connect, it's going to get hit pretty hard. And that seems to be kind of where he's been. I think, obviously limiting the walks is going to be huge for him, moving forward as well. Now let's look at Merrill Kelly. I kind of mentioned him before. This is a guy, an unknown commodity, a guy that pitched at Desert Mountain. He pitched at ASU. He went to Korea. You saw his fastball numbers spike up. But this is a guy that, the name of the game for him is even when he throws in the zone, he's not going to get hit super hard. He does a really good job, attacking the zone. It's when he, walks kind of come into the equation and his pitch count starts to get up. That's when he really struggled. That's, I believe it was Chicago where he really struggled. But overall, I think you can be really impressed with him and Luke Weaver. Weaver struggled in his first start, but has really, developed nicely. Most recently had a bit of a rough outing, but you're seeing him give up one earned run, no earned runs, two earned runs, three earned runs. Like, he's putting himself in a position to win, sitting at a 3.73 ERA. Carson Kelly has caught him every single start, and that should tell you something. But I think that the rotation has been good. It needs to be great if they want to make this playoff push. Greinke is definitely leading the charge right now. You need to see improvement from Robbie Ray. Luke Weaver, I think, is starting to kind of put it together. I saw, that he's throwing more of a cutter, and that's we've seen some better results from him. But you look at the additions that Mike Hazen's been able to do, again, with a pretty limited budget and a times where injuries have happened, looking back at Steven Souza, he's been able to make moves and help this ball club a lot. He took a flyer on Adam Jones. I shouldn't say took a flyer, because we all knew Adam Jones was going to be he can continue to be a very good player. It was just there was no market for him because of the way this offseason has taken shape again. He's been so good. Adam Jones has been such a huge addition offensively, defensively, in the clubhouse. You look at Greg Holland, he's been great. I think Carson Kelly and Luke Weaver are guys to keep an eye on in the way that they develop. Blake Swihart's a nice addition. Wilmer Flores is a nice addition. And most of these guys are just low risk. If they don't pan out, okay, they don't pan out. You're not sinking a lot of money into them. Hazen has had to get creative, and he's done a nice job to put this team in a position to win. Now, moving forward, at what point it's going to be interesting to see what the Diamondbacks do as we approach the trade deadline. If they feel, what's the record they need to have where they're going to be buyers? What's the record they need to have where they're going to be sellers? What's the record where they kind of just stand pat, maybe make some minor deals? I think that Hazen last year really went after the bullpen. He had multiple trades, but it didn't really break the bank. That sort of thing. Last year it was, or 2 years ago, it was JD Martinez. That was a huge win for the Arizona Diamondbacks. But moving forward, if they're eight games out and it's a week away from the trade deadline, what's going to happen? But I think that they've been a pleasant surprise. I think they've even played a little bit better than I thought they would. But I still think that this is a very talented team, and I think Luke Weaver could develop into a nice starter moving forward. I think Carson Kelly is probably your catcher of the future. And this is all without talking about David Peralta and the year that he has had. You know, if they keep this up, I think that David Peralta is probably an MVP candidate because he is really setting the tone for them as well. Not only getting on base, playing great defense in left field, his power is consistently going up. He has just been so consistent for the Arizona Diamondbacks really the past like 3 years. I think he's really kind of come into his own a lot, and I think a big part of that is just being healthy. So I think if the Diamondbacks are in late September and pushing for a playoff spot, like, yes, he should get some MVP consideration. I know the numbers that Cody Bellinger is putting up right now and just the absolute world beater that he is. But when you look at, you know, who's been the most important to their team, I think David Peralta can be argued for that. So I think that could be, you know, he's definitely got to keep it up. But I think that, you know, he obviously has had a great first month to the season. Now we're going to transition over to from the Diamondbacks to the Arizona Cardinals. Brad was able to catch up with Kent Summers talking about the draft. It was a very busy time with, you know, Kyler Murray, and then what's going to happen with Josh Rosen, and then the Cardinals really going all in on getting some playmakers around Kyler Murray. Overall, I thought it was a good draft. Well, in a vacuum, I thought it was a great draft. Josh Rosen, that's a whole other topic, and Kent Summers is definitely going to cover that here with Brad Sesmat.
Kent Summers joins us now via Skype, columnist for the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Kent weighing in on a number of topics following the draft with the Arizona Cardinals. All right, partner, you brought out the sledgehammer, I felt like, in regards to Rosen, strategy, everything with this team. State your case on where you're at with the Cardinals now that it's all done.
I just didn't think the first round choice made a lot of sense, not a year after they traded up to take Josh Rosen with the 10th overall pick. I still think Josh Rosen can be a very good NFL quarterback. I'm not sold that Kyler Murray is going to be that much better. I just felt like the cost was too high. They moved up last year in the draft, gave up a third and a fifth to take Rosen. Paid him, you know, the huge signing bonus, took the brunt of that contract, and now, you know, a year later, getting rid of him for pennies on the dollar and taking an additional $8 million cap hit. Look, I like Kyler Murray a lot. I saw almost every game Oklahoma played this year. He's dynamic, but he's also 5'10", and he's also has a baseball option. Mm-hmm. And how committed is he to football? I still think that question will linger for a couple of years.
Okay, now the draft is over, Kent. The deal with Rosen is done. Are they a better team today than they were at this time last week?
Maybe a modicum better, just because they've got draft picks coming in, because they addressed the receiver position, because they have, I think, finally a very good cornerback that they compare with Patrick Peterson, or maybe take over for Patrick Peterson one day, and Byron Murphy, a Saguaro product. I do like the receivers they drafted. The Isabella kid in the second round can fly. They needed speed at that spot. I think it's probably a misnomer to label him a slot receiver just because of his size. He's, you know, not too many slot receivers can run a 4.3. 40. So I like what they did in the draft, other than, you know, not getting offensive linemen high in the draft. But, you know, it was a team with so many needs that it's hard to address all of them just via the draft.
Kent, let's get off of the story about the players, and I want to focus on management. You've covered this team as a beat writer. Now you're in the position of columnist. You're a voter for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know the NFL inside and out. When you see what's gone on here in the last year of going from Steve Wilks to Cliff Kingsbury, from going Josh Rosen to Kyler Murray, from Steve Keim last summer and his DUI, where is this organization at in terms of credibility across the league? Internally, do they understand how far away they are? Vegas listed them today at 100-1 to win 5 games next year. Not that Vegas is the end-all of end-all, but your overall view of where the organization is away from the roster and in the front office.
Well, we all know, you know, you want to complain about Vegas, but then the results come in and it's uncanny how, you know, the odds makers are usually right. You know, I think it's an organization as a crossroads. I've covered them or been around them for almost their whole time here in Arizona. And I can't remember an off season like this with two, where their biggest moves were just two huge gambles. They hire a coach in Kingsbury with zero NFL coaching experience, a guy who had a losing record and got fired at his alma mater. Then they draft a quarterback who's 5'10", who had 1 year as a starter at the college level. And, you know, you stop to think about the risks involved with each of those moves. Clearly, they're rolling the dice. We've known for a while Steve Keim's job is on the line. I think, you know, over after the first 3 years of success that they had with the Keim-Arians regime, I think the football side of the organization got cocky. Mm-hmm. I really do, that they had the answers. I think they didn't stay humble. The 16 and 17 drafts were bad. A lot of free agency choices were bad. You know, and there's an old saying in the NFL or all of sports, you know, either be humble or get humbled. And, you know, I think they've been humbled, and we'll see where it all ends out. But it's definitely a pivotal year. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury has to prove he can coach at this level, and Kyler Murray has to prove he can play at this level. That doesn't mean finishing 500, but that does mean showing a significant improvement over what we saw last year.
When you talk about Steve Keim's job being in jeopardy, at the end of the day, he and Michael Bidwell have been together for many, 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 many years. Michael, in all of this, has been out front. Has Michael taken much heat, much blame? I think it's all falling on Steve. I would say it's the top organization down situation.
No question about it, you know, and Michael deserves a lot of credit for the stadium and for the success that they had. And
Super Bowl's coming, eager, yeah.
Yeah, and he was eager to take that credit. He wanted it and deserved it. So obviously now he needs the blame. I think it's a reason Steve Keim kept his job after last season and Steve Wilks was fired, is that Michael Bidwell was right there every step of the way on the hiring process. That wasn't a Steve Keim call. I mean, that was two guys conducting a coaching search, just like they did with Bruce Arians, and really just like they did with Cliff Kingsbury, and the drafting of Kyler Murray, same thing. Nothing happens in that organization of any consequence without Michael Bidwell signing off on it. So, of course, he's the president. You know, maybe one day he'll be called the owner. So he's obviously going nowhere. But Steve Keim could be even as close as he and Michael are. I mean, another bad season, a fourth straight year out of the playoffs. And if, like I said, I don't expect them to go to the playoffs. I don't know that Michael does. But without improvement, I think we could see a different general manager in 2020.
Kent Summers with us, AZ Central Sports, Arizona Republic columnist. Before I get you out of here, Patrick Peterson last week had some odd moments with his social media. What are we to read into that now?
He's obviously not happy with someone. I was told by an NFL source that somebody in the front office said something to him that irritated him, that made him unhappy. You know, and we know going back to midseason last year, Patrick asked for a trade, pretty much hung Steve Wilks out to dry because the news broke while they were on the practice field, and Wilks knew nothing about it. You know, and a team captain is asking for a trade. I mean, it really helped cut the legs out under Steve Wilks. And now, you know, a week or two ago, Patrick is posting cryptic messages on Instagram and Twitter, et cetera. And people are wondering what's going on. It's Patrick. He's a really good person. He's done a lot of good in the community. I think at times he has a thin skin. I don't know what was said to him. You know, and maybe he's justified. But I also think if you're not going to detail what it is publicly, then don't put out cryptic messages on social media. You know, that's the level of passive aggressiveness that's not needed. You know, go settle it behind closed doors. And then if you want to go public with it, go public with it. But don't go halfway, leaving everybody wondering what's going on.
Before I get you out of here, biggest question in your mind now that needs to be answered between now and the start of training camp?
Ooh, really good question. I think for the Cardinals, it's putting this offense together. What's it going to look like? Mm-hmm. You know, Cliff Kingsbury mentioned at the owners' meetings, I think, that you know, when he came here, he didn't really have an actual physical playbook. It was all digital. It was on video. And he and his staff are trying to mesh that together, his system with the NFL system. And how is he able to install that? And what's it going to look like with Kyler Murray at quarterback? I think a big thing now is, what's that offensive line going to look like? Are they going to be able to have David Johnson back functioning at a David Johnson level? And are they going to be able to protect Kyler Murray enough that he's not running for his life every play?
A lot of questions for sure. Good stuff as always, Kent. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Kent Summers joining us via Skype after the draft is complete. Good stuff there, of course, with AZ Central Sports, their columnist.